The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Hello and welcome to the Health Hour of Informed Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW and streaming to CHD TV. So glad you could join us this afternoon, this evening. Depending on where you're listening, you could be anywhere in the world, I guess. We're so glad you are here. This first hour of our show is brought to you by the Washington Chapter of Children's Health Defense. And if you're in Washington State, and you haven't signed up yet, please visit the website and sign up for free, wa.childrenshealthdefense.org. Help keep free speech on the air if you can by maybe donating a little something every month really is important to keep this going. You know, there's going to be a massive rally march. It's not this Monday, but next Monday in Washington, D.C., that Children's Health Defense is organizing. It's all about censorship and free speech because, you know, the Supreme Court is about to hear some information that they're going to be ruling on regarding the federal government violating our free speech rights and censoring Americans. It's probably one of, if not the most important topic that we have today, because if free speech does not exist, none of our freedoms exist. So this radio show, we're so proud of, and we're so proud of you, the listeners who support it, who keep it on the air. It's donation only. So thank you so much for that. The views expressed on this radio show are not necessarily those of KKNW or CHD TV. We are not giving medical or legal advice. I've got Bob and Javier are both busy, so I recruited at the last minute my wonderful Lisa Templeton. Lisa, hello, Lisa.
Good afternoon, Bernadette. Happy to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for last minute jumping in. So Lisa is with the leadership of the Washington Chapter of Children's Health Defense, and she's also a director of Informed Choice Washington. And actually, she's also the Washington State Director of Stand for Health Freedom. So she's a lot like me in wearing a lot of hats, besides being mom and wife and all those, and very, very important hats as well. So thank you so much. Our guest coming on, Lisa, doesn't have a lot of time. We get her just for the first 25 minutes or so of the show. So I'm going to bring her on right away. She's calling via phone because she doesn't have great internet reception. Her name is Sharon Landrum. Sharon, welcome to the Health Hour.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you, Bernadette.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, I'll let listeners know that I learned about your story that we're going to be talking about today through your wonderful sister, Dr. Denise Sibley, who I consider to be a very dear friend. And of course, a lot of she's been interviewed on this show, and a lot of listeners know her as a fierce advocate for medical freedom, informed consent, and of course, ivermectin, which she helped make available over the counter in the state of Tennessee. So Sharon, when Denise and I were driving to Nashville recently to do some good work, she was telling me about your injury. And as she was discussing what happened to you, and it involves sitting, which is the theme of this show that you inspired, you experienced pretty severe injury, which you are still dealing with today. And I thought this is really an important topic. So thank you for sharing your personal experience. And I'll just let you sort of begin at the beginning, if you would, explaining what happened.
I'll start at the beginning because that's a very good place to start.
Yes.
I had a full-time job after homeschooling my children. I obtained that job in August of 2013. And I was not used to sitting all the time. This job required me to commute about 35 to 40 minutes away one way and then back. And, you know, it was an 8-hour day with an hour lunch. And after about a month, I started developing right hip pain right at the joint at the trochanter. And, you know, I tried to just press through it. When I got to the point where I couldn't sleep at night, I went to an osteopath where he took an x-ray of my hips. You know, this was after months. He said I had a leg length discrepancy and diagnosed me with bursitis. So he gave me a cortisone shot in that right trochanter. I think that's the right way to say it. Denise would know. But anyway, I had follow-up, still had a lot of pain. It was just increasing. It went from one side to the next side. It spread, and I'm going to be very blunt, to my butt, to the back of my thighs. Had more x-rays, was prescribed a muscle relaxer and prednisone. When I felt like after 2 months of that I was going absolutely nowhere and was getting worse, I went to a different doctor, an orthopedist, and explained about the pain in my pelvic area, my hip, my butt. And at this point, it felt like I was sitting on steel. There were pins and needles. He said, yes, you do have bursitis in both hips. And he gave me exercises. Well, that didn't do anything. I followed up. He shot both hips with cortisone, and I was miserable. So he said, okay, let's do physical therapy. So I tried that for a month or two. There was no change, and I was getting desperate at this point in time. I was getting no sleep. I could not sit. And I was trying to hold down this new job. I wanted to prove that I could, you know, do this job. I loved the job, but it was killing me. The chair was uncomfortable. So I followed up with this doctor, and at this point, I'd even developed lower back pain in my SI joint. So he gave me a cortisone shot in my SI joint. There was no change in the pain level. And with follow-up with him, I just broke down. I said, I cannot go on like this. I'm not sleeping. I can barely do anything at this point. So he said, okay, let's do physical therapy. And at this point, he thought maybe it's a piriformis issue. So he suggested dry needling. I tried that for 3 visits, didn't respond, tried ultrasound therapy, no change. Then I was out with my daughter at a local warehouse and just could not hardly walk and was just thought I was going to fall and faint because of the pain. Mm-hmm. I was just dizzy. I developed numbness and weakness in my feet and legs. And so went to the ER, had a CT scan, blood work was normal, prescribed hydrocodone, but it didn't relieve the pain. Nothing would relieve pain. A couple days later, I was admitted to the local hospital. They did MRIs of my lumbar and pelvis, neck, hip, x-rays, and, you know, was released. They couldn't find anything. I was released and was put on Lyrica, which is a nerve medication, and then prescribed Dilaudid for pain relief. I was getting nowhere. I could not sleep. If you were to see me at this point in time, I could not sit. When I laid down, I could not lay on my belly because that hurt. I could not lay on either side because that hurt. I could not lay on my back. So all I would
do. Well, there's nothing left, Sharon. You went around the holes.
Yes, I flipped like a fish. And I was going nuts. I wasn't sleeping. So, I was in severe pain.
Sharon, this whole time you said you were continuing, though, to do this commute. So you were sitting in the car and you were continuing to hold down your job, sitting at a desk job this whole time. Mm-hmm. And you weren't, they weren't telling you that the sitting was probably the cause of it and making it worse?
No, I ended up like at this particular job just kneeling on my knees in my chair and propped my computer up on a box to just alleviate that. But I mean, and at this point, it was getting hard to stand too because my legs were getting so weak. What was happening was my muscles were atrophying in my my glutes. So to make it's a long story. You know, I did a synopsis, and I have figured out that I saw approximately 13 doctors within this entire journey that I've been on. Three neurologists, two family practice, an orthopedist, a podiatrist, a physiatrist, a sleep psychologist, two chiropractors, some pain management doctors. But what happened was the imaging and any lab work did not show anything except that there was possibly some nerve compression in the pelvic area. And it didn't show up well because I think whoever was doing the MRIs was not specialized enough to really look at that area. The last person I went to, Denise was incredible, my sister, she is a godly woman who really cares about people. She intervened and tried to get some people from UVA involved. The neurologists there, you know, they performed EMG, lumbar punctures, several MRIs. And they said, you know, there's a nerve root that's sticking out as being clearly abnormal. And this particular neurologist said they could do a very aggressive nerve root biopsy, but it's very risky. And I said, what do you mean very risky? When she called me, she said, well, one of the patients was paralyzed. I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. Not going to risk that. So somehow I got an appointment. I don't remember how this happened because this was now 2014. I could not, I had to leave the job because I could not sit any at all. I was in such pain. I went to see a physiatrist, and at this particular visit, now keep in mind, I can't drive at this point because I can't sit. So I am having to be, helped with any driving at all. This physiatrist, was able to diagnose me immediately as a pelvic floor dysfunction. And they said I needed to see a pelvic floor specialist for PT, and he said, get off all the medicine. So that's where my journey improves.
Sharon, I began, can I ask something?
Sure.
Did you say podiatrist?
Physiatrist.
How do you spell it?
P-H-Y-S-I-A-T-R-I-S-T. Physiatrist. I also saw a podiatrist during this time too because I had foot trouble. Everything was going crazy. So the physiatrist knew of a pelvic floor specialist in PT, and this is where things started improving. I went to her and have been seeing her since 2014, and she is amazing. She said, this is going to take a while. I see people like this, but not at this level generally. It's going to be layers to work on. So she began to work on me. And then the other bright spot through all this that helped me through this journey was prolotherapy. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
No, explain that.
Okay, prolotherapy is used to treat musculoskeletal conditions. And it's short for proliferative therapy. Denise had a patient that was under severe pain, and she had gotten relief from that, and she suggested it to me. So we found someone in the D.C. area that practices that. What it does is it uses a dextrose solution that's inserted into or near a ligament or tendon, and that irritates the tissue and triggers productive inflammation. And then that inflammation triggers a healing cascade in the area. So it's kind of natural healing. It's not, it's just provoking your body to heal itself by this inflammation. So that did a number on my glutes, which I failed to mention earlier. They discovered through the MRI that my both glutes had torn muscles, and I'm wondering if that was from the cortisone shots that were there, because I didn't have them before. Yeah, so I've found a lot of help with the prolotherapy and with the pelvic the pelvic PT that I've been through.
Could you repeat again the what that what you were diagnosed with that finally led to the answer? What was that called?
Denise knows all the medical terms, but nerve compression is what.
Text it to me, Denise.
Pudendal nerve.
Nerve compression.
Yeah, nerve compression. Yes. Pudendal neuralgia. So I think that would probably be proper. I asked my physical therapist this week, I said, do you see a lot of people with this? And she said, yeah, you know, 50% of the people she sees suffer from, you know, what I did, but not to the level. She said she sees men and women. I can't stress enough to people, do not press through the pain. it will change your life.
Don't be a
change
hero.
Your life. Yeah, I can't stand for a long time or sit for a long time, I just can't. But you know, I make adjustments for that. You know, I lay on the floor, I stand up, I sit down. I just vary positions a lot. So,
Did they attribute these diagnoses to the sitting right away, or did that come later with some realization?
The diagnosis, it came. I think you know my. My PT is the one who said, you know, you have a lot of muscle atrophy in your pelvic area because of the pudendal nerve damage. So I don't know what the proper diagnosis is other than neuralgia, nerve compression. Yeah.
But did you know that it was from sitting?
Go ahead.
It is from sitting, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Did they figure that out, or you? Sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Lisa.
How did you connect these problems to the sitting?
How did I what?
Connect the problems that you're having. How did you figure out that the root cause was sitting?
Because it didn't start until this sitting job. I had no trouble before then. You know, I was very active, did aerobics, you know, walked. I was able to. I mean, I was able to sit, but I wasn't used to sitting 9 to 10 hours a day for 5 days a week, and that's what really bothered me. And I'm one that I'll, you know, Denise presses, as you know, Bernadette, she presses through pain. It must be something in her genes, so we kind of do that. We just kind of press on. We're going to get through this, you know. But this really had a lasting effect.
Yeah, and she just texted me that the name is sacral nerve compression and also pudendal nerve compression. So thank you, Denise, for sending those. So yeah, she's awesome. So it brings up a couple of things to me of, you know, first of all, when our bodies send signals that something's wrong, it is usually pain, discomfort. And, you know, a little bit of muscling through can be okay, but very limited, because really it's your body's telling you something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I think is so frustrating with so much about the medical complex that we have today, many people with medical conditions such as you experience, they go through dozens of doctors and tests before anybody actually finds a proper diagnosis and a proper treatment. And I imagine that others in your exact condition ended up on a lifetime of just painkillers.
I'm sure, I was on a fentanyl patch at one point because I just could not function. But that, you know, that would lose its effect over time. You know, I counted up, I've tried like 14 different medications for this.
Wow.
Yeah. it's nuts. I've tried so many things, mm-hmm. acupuncture, dry needling, cold laser therapy, mm-hmm. cognitive behavioral therapy to try to sleep, but I couldn't sleep mm-hmm. because I was in pain. You know, pain yeah. is a horrible thing. I'm not a depressed person, but this in the very deep, darkest point in this, I just did not want to live. I could not live like this because I was in such pain. And thankfully, my family rallied around me at that point in time because I couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Wow. Thank you for sharing this with me. And for anybody hearing what you were just saying and seeing me laugh, it's because your sister is texting me something funny. So I apologize. I'm not going to read it. She's making a self-deprecating joke that was very funny, but I'm wow. Yeah. So pain is bad. It's your body's signal. If it goes on too long, it can be so mm-hmm. undermining to your quality of life. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think what's fascinating about like that prolotherapy, inflammation is both good and bad. There's good mm-hmm. inflammation.
Right.
You know, whenever you get sick or experience an injury, your body does cause inflammation to start the healing mm-hmm. process. It's when that inflammation mm-hmm. gets out of control, then it becomes the disease aspect of it can sneak in. And so it's fascinating. They've figured out how to utilize it to trigger natural healing.
The sad thing is that insurance, of course, anything effective is not covered by insurance.
Yeah.
So it can get costly and it's, you know, it could be prohibitive for some people.
Yeah.
And it has increased over the years. The cost increase has definitely been an issue over the years, but it is, mm-hmm. I would highly recommend it. I just had a knee injury about a year ago, and that it made a huge difference in my knee. I'm definitely a proponent of prolotherapy.
Excellent. And today you are pain medicine free. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. I am. I just know signals now that my body cannot sit any longer, so I have to get up. I mean, so I can only sit maybe for an hour. And then I have to fidget, okay? So because mm-hmm. my glutes are torn, they're weak. So I can only stand for, you know, like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. But I have to fidget mm-hmm. a bit. So I just change positions. But, yeah, what mm-hmm. happened really harmed my body.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. But, you know, God is good. God is good. He's taught me a lot through this. I feel like perhaps I can help someone, you know, that's going through this because there is light at the end of the tunnel. But when you're in pain, you don't see that.
Yes, exactly. We are beautifully designed. And then just finding the ways to support that design to lead to healing is the challenge. And I'm so mm-hmm. glad that you finally came across the right individual to help lead you toward healing. I'm curious if you have yet, of all the things you've tried, near infrared sauna, the near infrared light for any, have you done that one?
I have not recently. You know, I've thought about it, but I have mm-hmm. not. I know when I was going through the very crux of this in 2013 to 2017, it was not a hot item back then, but I did try the cold laser therapy, and that did nothing. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I've thought about the near-infrared. I've read a lot about it. My daughter is trying that for some time.
Oh, excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a really cool home one that I splurged on. So if you're ever visiting your sister and you want to come down and give mine a try, you'd be welcome to come sit in my sauna. Give it a try.
Thank you. Sweet.
Yeah. Well, Sharon. Lisa.
Sorry. How much longer are you with us here on the show, Sharon?
A few minutes. I've got dinner guests coming, so I'm excited to have them. I just wish I could have spent longer with you guys.
Oh, we do too.
Well, we are so grateful that you gave us this half hour and you pushed your guests off a half hour. And I know that people will benefit from you sharing your experience and knowing you got through it. You got through it. You've got natural healing going on. You're pain med free.
Yeah.
And we've all learned from your experience. Cool. Do not ignore mm-hmm. pain.
Do not.
And persevere and maybe explore prolotherapy.
Yeah, and a good pelvic floor PT, physical therapist. A pelvic floor physical therapist, if you've got that type of pain, they can make all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, Sharon Landrum, thank you so much for joining us on the Health Hour of Informed Life Radio. We'll go ahead and let you go, and we're going to cover some other health aspects of sitting.
Okay.
Take care.
God bless you guys. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Awesome. So Lisa, I'm sorry that we talked. It's a little bit awkward when somebody's on the audio and catching each other's eye to see who's going to talk when, but it gets challenging, but we did it. So I was so grateful to her coming on and sharing that personal experience. That's not always easy to do, to share what you went through. And but I think it's so important to let others hear, and there might be some people out there that experience the same sort of pain. So many of us spend way too long sitting. I don't know about you. I know you probably do a bit because you work so much for all the organizations that you do work for. Do you have a stand-up, sit-down type desk situation? Or?
Well, this is probably the world's cheapest stand-up desk. I just have this bin here that I put the laptop on, and then I just move the chair back and just stand.
There you go. Very good. It works. I've got a stand-up desk, but because I've got it set up now for the radio show, I tend to just leave it sitting. And otherwise, I bring my laptop to everywhere in the house, and I'm never in one place very long. And the kitchen counter is probably my favorite because sometimes I will sit and then I will stand because it's, just right with my height that I can do either. And I do tend to walk. I try to move. I'm just naturally a fidgety person, I think, by nature. And I didn't realize till Sharon was talking that that might have a lot of health benefits to, getting up and moving frequently, to spare us. But Lisa, I pulled together some resources for us to look at. So we've already covered, when you're sitting, you're in a physical position that can compress nerves, which is what Sharon experienced. Something got pushed, pinched, bulged, or something from this, her beginning at a certain stage in life to suddenly go from somebody who was up and about all the time to sitting 8-9 hours, right? So in the, compression injuries, I was reading, we are all familiar like with carpal tunnel. So that's repetitive compression, like on your wrist area. And there's other pain that people realize that come from repetitive movement. I think people don't tend to think of sitting as a repetitive movement. It's a repetitive non-movement that is compressing probably many areas. And then the other thing you and I were talking about earlier, off the air, was I had been reading that, if you look at some, primitive cultures and, native tribes and such, when you'd see images of them or portrayals of them sitting around the fire, doing their cooking, doing whatever, they're not seated all the time. A lot of times they're squatting, they're down on their haunches. So if you imagine, kind of squatting down like you could do comfortably as a kid, so your knees are up and your tailbone is practically touching the ground, and you think of that position, and it's so elongating to the spine. It really pulls that whole area where Sharon was being crunched, that is being stretched when you do this movement. And people can look that up, and there's some stretches you can do. So I try to, throughout the day, when I think of it, I just go somewhere. Sometimes I'll grab a counter or back of a chair for balance, and I'll just kind of get down in that squatting position and really stretch out my tail. I feel like I want to do it now after hearing Sharon's story, but and really stretch that out, and it feels really good. People might have to build up to it if you're not used to it. Those muscles and everything might be kind of tight. And of course, we're not giving health advice, but that is a position that I find through the day helps me undo some of the compression that I have been putting myself through. I'll do it like in the bathroom of the gas station that I stop at when I do my 4.5 hour, 5 hour drive from my house to the Capitol in Nashville, you know, to kind of stretch out from that. And
I remember a neighbor across the street I used to have, and I think she was from Korea, and she would work in the yard for just hours at a time in that position that you were just discussing. I wonder if that's a cultural practice in Korea as well, or if that was unique to her.
Well, I think it's probably a more natural way for human beings to sit. And then as we became, you know, modern, we invented the chair, and then it became not civilized to sit on the ground or to, you know, squat before a fire. Even the word is a little uncivilized, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the right word to squat. I guess I have to find the exact right term to describe that position. Mm-hmm. I think y'all know what I'm talking about, though. So I've got some resources here that I would love for you and I to review. I'm going to go to one of my very favorite websites where a lot of times I begin my research because I think he does an excellent job. It's Dr. Axe. Are you familiar with Dr. Axe?
Yes, I found him many years ago.
Yeah, he's pretty wonderful. This website is great at giving an overview of an issue, a medical or a health issue, telling you the science, telling you some of the medicines, telling you natural approaches. And it's a great place to, I think, to begin research. And then you can kind of go down the rabbit hole on different areas and explore what you discover here. So he's got this article, and look at it, it's dated January 22nd, 2024. Oh, so timely. Americans sitting more than ever, greatly raising risk of early death. How about that? Let's see. Is it showing big enough there on the, or should I try to make it a little bit bigger?
Let me try to make it bigger if you're able.
Let me see if it's able to do it without losing. One more. How's that?
Yeah, that's better. Thanks.
Nice. So this article here is talking about an April 2019 study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, so JAMA. And it found that from 2001 to 2016, the amount of time that both adults and adolescents in the U.S. are spending has remained high and stable, which is not a good thing. So Americans spend at least 6 to 8 hours per day being sedentary. That's very concerning. If you've got, say, 8 hours in bed, 8 hours being sedentary in a chair, that only, you know, is 8 hours or less of movement. And that's just not how we're designed to be. Too much sitting doesn't just put you at risk for problems like weight gain, bulging disc, and tension headaches. It's now considered to be as dangerous as smoking. And I believe you mentioned, Lisa, you had seen some articles saying much the same thing.
Yeah, sitting is the new smoking.
Yeah. Can imagine if you're smoking and sitting.
At the same time.
Yes. The verdict scientists came to after publishing a 2016 study reviewing 16 other studies. So it was a meta review of studies that were happening. So Dr. X says that these are the main takeaways from this JAMA study. It was found that about 65% of the population sat watching television or videos for at least 2 hours a day. Time spent using the computer outside of school or work for at least 1 hour a day increased between 2001 and 2016. 56% of children and 57% of adolescents and half of adults now spend more than 60 leisurely minutes on the computers daily. I don't know about you, Lisa, but does that seem like a gross underestimate of the time they spend? An hour?
Yeah,
I think it's many, 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 many more hours.
A little more ideal, wouldn't it?
I think it's so much more than that. I think maybe people weren't honest in some of these surveys. And in addition, the 2023 study analyzed data from four prospective cohort studies that involved nearly 12,000 participants who are at least 50 years old. And I think this information gets really interesting. The authors, and I'm quotes here, sedentary time was associated with higher mortality risk, but only in individuals accumulating less than 22 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity per day. So that's really kind of amazing. It only took 22 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity to negate some of the worst effects of being sedentary for most of the rest of the day.
I was concerned about things more towards the end of the article that talked about too much sitting will actually wipe out the positive effects
of the exercise,
which was,
yes. Yeah. Let's go down. Thank you for that. Let's go on down and see if we can find where that, well, we've got some great graphics here that he has, how sitting destroys your body. 3.4% increased risk of diabetes for each hour spent watching TV increases 3.4%. 120 minutes sitting for this length of time erases the health benefits gained from 20 minutes of exercise. So every 2 hours that you sit, you undo the goods of 20 minutes of exercise. That's concerning. Pain and muscle imbalances, reduced flow to the brain. Sitting can increase the risk of developing multiple myeloma cancer by up to 43%. It impacts your heart, the brain, the pancreas, the liver, cancers, and all of this. And we're going to review in some other areas why that might be so. Some of the things we've been looking at. Have I got to it yet, Lisa? Or was that it?
The sitting negates the effect of, it said up there a little bit in the graphic, 2 hours of sitting kind of wipes out 20 minutes worth of exercise. I'm not sure with respect to exactly what effects, but.
Yes. Yeah. So it's important to really, so let's look at the advice that DrAxe.com provides of how to eradicate too much sitting. Let's see, he's got a list down here. Have moving meetings with your coworkers. So, you know, if you've got a big enough building, you can get up and maybe take laps through the corridors. I'm remembering a movie from the 1980s where all the executives met on the roof and they had to jog and they were following the director of the CEO of the company, trying to keep up with him as he was jogging around and they had an outside meeting. Request a standing workstation. Take foam rolling breaks or simply get up and stretch. So I didn't look up foam rolling. What's foam rolling, Lisa? Any idea?
It looks like a bloated rolling pin. They might have different sizes, maybe about this much in diameter and maybe about this long, a couple feet, cool. A foot and a half. And I've seen people kind of put it under their calves on the floor and roll back and forth. So it's kind of like a deep massage on different parts of the body. You could probably do it on your glutes and thighs. I don't know if you're really coordinated, you might be able to do your stomach if you wanted to. But another good tip is to just kind of build in, you know, there's like a simple timer or something you can get for your phone that will ping you every hour to go do some jumping jacks or squats or something else.
That's an excellent idea, a little reminder, because you often get into your work and you forget. And if you've got that little ping to get you up and moving, I think that's a great idea. Let's see, what's next? Go ahead and if you can see it well enough, Lisa, go ahead and read what's after foam rolling, the next bullet.
Oh, sure. Take an exercise class during your lunch break or just go outside and walk. And I've also been learning so much fascinating information about the effects of sunlight on our skin, even if it's cloudy, just with respect to balancing your circadian rhythm. So just going outside, no matter what the weather, the fresh air, besides what we're talking about, could just make a wonderful difference. Plus, it just really gives you like a refresh on your mindset, and whatever you're working on, it can really clear the mind. Oh,
yes, excellent. And, you know, we often talk about sunshine and vitamin D, but you are so right. And the exposure to sunlight has so many other health impacts on the body, including improving your receptors so that when you do make that vitamin D, you're able to utilize the vitamin D. There's just so much that we're meant to be outdoors. So thank you for those great reminders. What's the next one?
Talk on the phone while walking around the house instead of sitting on the couch, or, you know, you could be doing your kitchen chores, laundry, lots of good stuff while you're on the phone. Pick up your lunch instead of ordering delivery. Do calisthenics instead of lounging while watching TV. Try this word I have never seen before, fartlek workouts, if you want to make running more fun. Do you know what that is? There's a link.
I went and looked it up. It's Swedish or something. It's an awkward word to say in English. And I didn't explore it too much, but it's, I guess, so it's fartlek. If you look that up, you'll find some interesting ways to make running more fun. Now, I'm not a runner. I've never really enjoyed running. I ran track in high school briefly. I could not do the distance. I've never been good at distance, but I do like a good vigorous walk. So, but if you're into running, go check out the fartlek workouts. It's really hard to say.
Is running more fun because you're passing gas during this, or it has nothing?
It has nothing to do with that.
Okay, good. I'm definitely not going to try that. Last one on this bullet list is avoid mindless surfing on the internet, watching lots of videos and scrolling through social media when at home. Instead, take a walk outside, do some yoga, or play with your kids or dog.
Yeah, excellent, excellent advice. And it really is addictive to look at something, especially these social media posts, and things grab you and grab you and grab you. So we got to get out of those habits. Technology is wonderful until we become addicted slaves to it and it begins to undermine our health. Yeah. So I wanted to then share like one of the reasons why it's so important to move. I'm going to share this tab instead. And it has to do with, let me scroll up and get it more in there. This again is Dr. Axe, because it's a great place to start in this general conversation that we're having on this. Ways to maintain a strong lymphatic system. So the lymphatic system is one of the most under-discussed bodily systems that is absolutely key to your health that people don't understand. And one of the most important things to understand about your lymphatic system is it requires movement to pump. Your lymphatic system, it doesn't have something like a heart. You know, every movement of the body kind of compresses and engages with your muscles and your system to move the lymph along the channels of your lymph and through the lymph nodes. And let's read here a little bit exactly what the lymphatic system does and why. Do you see this picture here? For those on the radio, there's an image of a outline of a human being there. And then you see all these, this network of threads of your lymphatic system. It looks like your arteries or veins might look, only this is lymph. And there's all these little places with a little bubble that'd be like a lymph node. That's so important. So I'm just going to read what Dr. Axe, and I want to say thank you very much to Dr. Axe.com for having such good information for us to leap from. So the lymphatic system is a critical part of the immune system. It's vital for protecting us from illness and damaging disease-causing inflammation. The best way to protect the complex series of crisscrossing lymphatic vessels and nodes that span almost the entire body is to eat a healing diet, exercise, and take steps to detoxify the body naturally. So what is the lymphatic system? The lymphatic system is the body's inner drainage system, a network of blood vessels and lymph nodes that carry fluids from tissues around the body into the blood and vice versa. The lymphatic system has the primary role of protecting the body against outside threats such as infections, bacteria, and cancer cells, while helping keep fluid levels in balance. So, you know, it's the most amazing system that nobody's ever heard of, you know, or that nobody talks about. They might know, you know, if they get swollen lymph nodes in their neck, you know, or like right underneath your jawline when you have a cold, but they really don't understand what it means. And we don't have a whole lot of time to review the information here. So I encourage people to go down the rabbit hole on your lymphatic system and how it works. It is so fascinating. Yes.
Well, I saw back up there, the tonsils and the adenoids were examples of parts of your lymph system.
Yes.
And if you're like me, you had your tonsils removed when you were a child. So,
yeah,
it's one of those things that people say, you don't need it. If it's bothering you, just cut it out. So just something to think about. I don't think tonsillectomies are as common as they used to be, but
yeah. And it says here that the function of the tonsils, the glands are located at the back of your throat that filter bacteria before digestion takes place. Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds pretty darn important.
When you showed that diagram or the kind of the illustration of the human body with all of the little vessels and the little nodes, it brought to mind women. You may not want to wear a bra because it constricts those and prevents their proper function. Mm. Also, you know, those little round trampolines, like my grandma used to have one called a rebounder.
Yes, yes.
Apparently, those are really good for getting your lymph system functioning well and draining properly.
Yes.
And then also, have you seen, it's like a machine that you stand on this little platform and it will jiggle. I call it the fat jiggler, and it totally reminds me of an I Love Lucy episode.
Oh, that's funny.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I do. Yes. That is funny.
You might be able to use one of those at the gym or at your chiropractors.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's an excellent idea.
Are we still connected at the gym or chiropractor's office?
Do they still have those things, the jigglers or whatever that is?
Yes, my gym, Planet Fitness, has one. They probably pretty much all have them. And then if you're in South King County, you can drop by Sunshine Corners, our mom and pop health food store, and they have one right in there. You can just stand amongst the tea and the books and just hold on to the handle and do the fat jiggler lymph system drainage.
Oh, that's really exciting. And you're reminding me, Lisa, that there are some massages that you can do to your face. I mean, probably to your whole body, but like, especially if you have a cold, look it up and find the proper way to do it, the proper movement. But there's ways that you can do a really gentle massage of your face and and help move the lymph through where you've got the clogging, you've got the infection. It just encourages the drainage. But you want to do it gently. You want to do it very carefully. And there's a lot of really good websites that that talk about that. So it's so important. So we know that, you know, exercise, we know it's good for muscle strength and for heart strength and cardiovascular and all that. But this overlooked lymphatic system movement and drainage is so key. And, you know, one of the things that's so concerning about the lymphatic system is whenever you get anything invades the body, you get a cut, you get a poke, you get an injection, which would be a vaccine. It triggers the part of what it does is it alerts the lymphatic system is involved. So like vaccine ingredients trigger the whole lymphatic system reaction, and the vaccine ingredients will kind of go to the nearest lymph nodes. You know, so in your arm, it's going to go like up underneath the arm. Oh, and the other reason why you may want to consider not using an aluminum containing deodorant and using, if you want to use anything, use something as natural as can be, is you've got some really important lymph nodes right in your underarm. When aluminum from your deodorant goes in there, it causes that to swell and it blocks your sweat ducts. This is not a healthy thing to do. It's not a good idea to put a neurotoxin, overall body toxin, directly into your lymphatic system. And that's what you're doing when you're using an aluminum antiperspirant.
And also use deodorants if you must, but do not use antiperspirants, because those, you still want to be able to sweat, but just hopefully not have the resulting smell.
You want maybe have something that neutralizes the odor, the odor, but as natural as possible, because whatever you put on your skin, especially when it's that close to your lymphatic system, it's going to be absorbed and it's going to have to make its way through your detox system. You know, so if you've got something more natural based, that's baking soda based or charcoal based, there's some really good ones out there that, and you can make a homemade one. And one thing that I did for a while, is you can just cut a lemon slice or a lime slice and just rub it. And it's amazing. It will last all day if you, rub lemon right on you. I don't know how it works, but it works. So pretty important.
The environment is not friendly to bacteria.
I guess not. Yeah, that's probably what it is. So let's just, we're getting low on time there. I think it's probably just going to be a couple more minutes. I want to look at the various ways that Dr. Axe recommends reducing inflammation and improving circulation. So healthy diet, exercise, not smoking, getting enough sleep, reducing stress. All of those are so important. Following an anti-inflammatory diet, I don't think a lot of Americans who tend to eat out on a regular basis or eat processed foods on a regular basis understand how much inflammation they're experiencing until maybe they go on a long fast or they go on an anti-inflammatory diet. And then they think, then they really realize, wow, I didn't even realize how swollen I was or how much pain I was in and how much what I considered arthritis was due to this chronic inflammation from the food I was eating, right? Lisa, you want to read some of the foods there that are on the anti-inflammatory diet? Can you see those?
Yes, and before I do that, can you hear me? I think there's a delay that's beginning to develop.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
One culprit that's recently come on my radar in a big way is industrialized seed oils.
Yes.
So that was listed above, any kind of vegetable oil, peanut oil, anything I would guess except maybe the cold pressed virgin olive oil and coconut oil and maybe avocado oil, as it says on here, unrefined.
Yes.
Do a search sometime, audience, on Weston A. Price has some good information about industrialized seed oils and the processing they go through. They have to go through high pressure, high heat, very unnatural conditions, and then they have to have chemical deodorizers applied. Other things that you don't want to be taking in. So I didn't get to your list, Bernadette.
No, that's okay. Folks can look it up. And I hope we just gave them enough information to intrigue them to explore why sitting too much is really undermining your health and how easy it is to integrate some movement into your everyday life. So Lisa, it's been a pleasure spending the health hour with you. We're going to take a break. We come back. We're going to be on the Liberty Hour next. Stay tuned.
Thanks.
During this unprecedented response to an infection outbreak, it has been made very clear that shutting down lives and businesses is not sustainable or repeatable. We've also learned that it's unnecessary. Treatments exist and always exist. For 99% of the population, nutrients and oxidative therapies that support the immune system and improve symptoms are always available to address viral infections. For the less than 1% who need more, inexpensive, unpatentable drugs can be added to the nutrient therapies to improve outcomes. It's time each and every one of us empower ourselves with this knowledge. We need not ever bring our lives to a halt again. We can both save lives and retain the liberty that nourishes us body and soul. Learn more at healthyimmunitynow.org. That's healthyimmunitynow.org.
Children's Health Defense is a nonprofit organization with a mission to end childhood health epidemics by working aggressively to eliminate harmful exposures, hold those responsible accountable, and establish safeguards to prevent future harm. The Washington chapter of Children's Health Defense is stepping up at the state and local levels, but we can't do this without you. Join us at wa.childrenshealthdefense.org. Let's restore and defend children's health and their futures in Washington State.
The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.